Hello, everyone. Welcome to this next instalment of A Rural Medley. I'm Lucinda Thatcher, and I'm a rural hospital medicine specialist and rural GP based in Gisborne. I work for the University of Otago's Section of Rural Health, Department of General Practice, and I'm joined today by Robin Chan, who is a rural generalist who is working in Taupō, having trained in Australia. She was a military medical officer in the Royal Australasian Army and a Royal Australian flying doctor based in Cairns. She may say that slightly differently to me. She moved to Taupō in 2018 and has an interest in the philosophy of medicine. And we're going to cover several topics in this series of three. One's going to be medical tribalism, one's going to be cognitive bias, and then we're going to have a look at some research that Robin has been doing herself around clinician well-being. So this is the first one. Welcome, Robin. Thank you very much for joining me. I know you said that you actually felt honoured and flattered, but actually I'm very grateful for your time because we were just talking about how busy we all are, and you are particularly busy. So welcome.
Oh, thanks, Lucinda. I am stoked to be here. And thanks for that lovely intro.
We covered these topics when we were down in Queenstown, and I just remember how much I enjoyed them. So I just thought it'd be really great to turn them into a podcast so that we could spread it a little further afield, and with the power of the internet and the World Wide Web now, anyone can access these, can't they? It's exciting.
Very exciting. Well,
or
fun.
Scary. Or scary, depending on how we
Yeah,
look at it.
That's right.
So we're going to start with medical tribalism, and I'll hand over to you and all yours.
Yeah, thanks, Lucinda. And hi to all those rural generalists, rural hospital medical specialists and rural GPs out there. What a special breed we all are in our own tribe. I came to this topic probably because of a little bit of a personal bias in that I am an Aussie trained GP at the heart of it. But I grew up in a really small village in the highlands of Papua New Guinea. And I moved to Australia when I was about 11 for high school and boarding school. And I'm also a half Chinese, half Aus. So my dad's actually Chinese and my mum's Australian. And very soon after I finished medical school, I went rural, mostly to some Indigenous, disadvantaged Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health services in Queensland, remote Queensland. And then I've ended up in beautiful Taupō, and I feel very privileged to be here. But I think some of that gives a bit of context to a sense I have of always being a little bit between different worlds and a little bit between even different tribes, dare I say it. And there's a real, you know, a search for my own identity within that. But there's also a real strength in being able to observe different tribes. And I use that word, I'll explain it a bit better as we go through, but observing different cultures from the outside, being curious about them, and really trying to understand the space between them, and how sometimes being part of a tribe is really special, but there's a dark side to it as well. Tribes can be incredibly a secure place to be, but we can be quite tribal in a way that actually disadvantages, really, particularly in this context, our patients. So that's where I'm coming from in this sort of concept. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I didn't realize you'd grown up in Papua New Guinea for a long time. Yeah, interesting. Does I think, yeah, I could see how you might get involved in or looking at this concept.
Yeah, so it really, this idea of tribalism, as I'm sort of going to discuss, it's really got nothing to do with Indigenous tribes or iwi. I just need to make that clear. I'm talking about something a little bit different. And it's an idea that was born out of social identity theory. So it harks right back to the 1970s, and a social psychologist, Heinrich Taschfeld, was a famous Nazi, a psychologist that studied Nazi Germany and really was interested in how ordinary Germans could participate in quite atrocious prejudice. And that was a whole body of research sort of flourished from there as to how we can identify with a certain group, how we start to compare ourselves to another group, and how that can allow some really prejudiced sort of behavior. And what happens is we tend to favor our own group and we see the traits of our group very favorably, but we lose empathy. We lose empathy for the other group. We depersonalize them. It becomes very much us and them. And as soon as you do that, it becomes quite easy to treat an out-group in a way that it really isn't respectful of their own humanity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And how you wouldn't have treated them previously or treat someone in your own group.
Yeah, exactly. And so this happens everywhere. It happens between nations, and there's a little bit of fun tribalism even between Australians and New Zealanders, right?
Absolutely. Pavlovas, underarm bowling. I could think of numerous ones from absolutely.
There you go. Let's not get into it. Clearly, we invented the
No,
pub.
yeah, this could turn dirty.
And it happens in sporting teams, and that's fun. We get really competitive and we identify strongly with our team. But it also happens between doctors and nurses. It happens between rural hospitals and referral hospitals. It happens between EDs and general practice, or even EDs and inpatient wards. It happens between different specialties. It happens between clinicians and administrators. We see this sort of phenomenon quite a bit in health systems. I can certainly think as a trainee, I actually really loved the tribalism in the ED. It was us against the world, especially you have your small team overnight and we're the front line, and there would be very unkind things said about the clinicians that were sending us work. And that's usually general practice. Oh, why can't they do this? Or why can't or the inpatient ward, or why are they so obstructive and why are they blocking our flow and why can't we meet our targets? This sort of thing.
100%, I remember those days.
And it's only probably getting long in the tooth, really, that you and prob and the beauty actually of being rural generalists, or like yourself, working in rural hospitals and in general practice, that you realize sometimes, the real power of this, our sort of field, is we do move between these different silos. We move between ED and ward. We move between general practice and community and hospital care. And that's a real opportunity, actually, to break down some of this tribalism. And I think it's a real power of the specialty, actually.
And there is no doubt that when you do work in those different spheres that you realize how much when you develop that relationship with the people in the other silos or tribes, which makes referring in easier, doesn't it? And two, it also gives you some insight to how annoying when someone is obstructive or how detrimental those comments are. To one, the team, and two, the relationships, and then three, the patients, aren't they? No
Oh,
win-win.
you're so right. And you hit it on the head. One of the key ways to actually, improve and break down some of these silos that we have is building relationships, like you say. And the key people who really disadvantages and are actually the patients. And it can become very wasteful. When we behave in these tribal ways, we don't share. That's what happens. We don't share resources. I had a classic one when I first started, and this is many years ago now, but when I first started here in Taupo, there was a we had these computer on wheels, the cow we call them, the computer on wheels in ED. And it wasn't really used in ED because this was what really wasn't seen to be any need for it. But ward rounds on the ward were taking a long time because, of course, you lug around big trolleys worth of paper files. This, at least, we still do. And at that time, there was said from the ward perspective, said, "Oh, look, can we take this computer on wheels because that would really speed up our ward rounds?" And the answer came back, "Well, no, because that's come out of our budget. That's the EDs on wheels." And it was flabbergasting to me that departments wouldn't share because it was really seen as us and them, and this is our stuff, and you get your stuff. But in fact, if we'd come up with a common goal, which was patient flow, if we can do our ward round faster and we can discharge patients faster, we'll help your bed block situation. You know, these sorts of ideas. So the solution, of course, is to have common organizational goals that are not that breach these different tribes or silos, you know?
And it's also, we talk wasteful of money, but it's actually also really wasteful of people's energy and time. And we're going to come to clinician well-being, but if you perceive that people perceive you poorly or you can't refer in, like that really wears you down, doesn't it? And it's just, I find my, since working back in ED as a GP, which is a thing we do in Gisborne, and just the ability to be able to refer in, and I talk to the doctors, and I don't need to sell it. I don't need to buff and turf it. I just literally say, hey, this person, they're like, yep, sweet, send it in. Right? And I'm not having to ring three people. It's just so much more efficient. And that's what we should have, isn't it? Efficiency of time and people, and it's a winner. It's a winner. So we need to break this all down.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So the silo mentality, it compromises efficiency of the organization. It promotes conflict, and there's a lot of waste, as you said. But, sharing requires trust, right? So one of the big things, I think, is really how do you create that trust? How do you create those relationships? And really, it's about collaborating. Once we stop competing with resources, and that's the other thing, if we see ourselves as a resource scarce environment, that promotes competition. But if we take a and if we take a an approach that actually, you know what, guys, we do actually have enough. We just need to collaborate across services and stop competing. We really solve some of these, put the patient journey in the center instead of perhaps the 6-hour target or whatever other KPI that another department might be working on at the time. We probably are going to improve efficiency and outcomes.
We could become clinical advisors, couldn't we, to cut to order?
Oh, totally.
I know.
We didn't need
Watch
guys.
this, everyone. Watch this space. No, I'm kidding. So not up my desire of career pathways. I'd be like, oh, I'd lose all sleep.
I know there's lots about clinical medicine we would miss.
Can you go back and see that? There's a quote there by Abraham Lincoln.
It's
You talk
really,
about that?
it's really hard to hate up close. And I think that comes to your point about building relationships. And one of the beauties of, being a rural generalist is that moving between different teams. But Abraham Lincoln says, look, I don't like that man. I must get to know him better. So, when you have a, and I sometimes do this now, if I'm picking up and I'm making a referral and I'm getting someone who's behaving in a tribal way. So, for example, they might be quite resistant to my referral, or they might be somebody who sounds as though they might be having a bad day, maybe forgotten their manners or not particularly helpful. I sometimes just think to myself, hey, I wonder what's going on in that department. I wonder what stressors are happening in that department. And I wonder how I can get to know that person's situation a little better so that I don't become the meat in the sandwich, and so we can smooth the way for patient care. And there are ways to do that. Of course, there's ways like, raising clinical incidents, but there's also ways of speaking to clinical directors and just finding out, hey, what's happening up there or in your hospital or in your department, and how can we smooth this process so that patients aren't disadvantaged? Yes, getting to know people better. I think there's a really good book by David Logan. It's old now, called Tribal Leadership, but he lays out the different types of tribal culture in within an organization. And he talks about five stages. And You know, the really bottom feeder stage one is where everyone's got the attitude that life sucks. You know, people are hostile, they're band together to get ahead in violent and an unfair world. And you see that's probably, you know, a bit of a gang culture. So that would be organizations that are probably, you know, illegal and undergoing illegal activities. Then you get a stage two where people are passively antagonistic. You know, I've seen this before, it's not going to work. They're quietly sarcastic, come to work and just do the bare minimum, judge each other, not really interested enough to put in any effort, quite undermining. Stage three, he reckons that's where most organizations are, where they compete. Knowledge is power, where we hoard our knowledge a little bit, we compete with each other. I need to outshine my other colleagues. Yeah. You sort of the people sort of wanting help and support, but actually quite disappointed in others, or feel that other people aren't living up to their expectations, or that other people don't have the ambition and skill that they've got. So it's quite an me sort of culture. Then there's stage four, which is tribal pride, where people are fully themselves and everyone seems happy and inspired and genuine. Culture is, you know, shared core values, but it's still tribal. It's our tribe really at the expense of your tribe. And our tribal culture is important and positive, but there's no space in it really to acknowledge the values of your tribe. So it's very much we're great. And then the top level, stage five, is where really we should all be aspiring to, which he calls innocent wonderment, where the sort of tagline is life is great. We are not comparing ourselves to another tribe. We're comparing ourselves to what is positive, possible. What is the potential here? How are we, how are we not going to beat a competitor, but how are we going to bring everyone along together? And I think that's quite inspirational. I actually think, you know, this is an older book and it's an American. So I actually don't think in New Zealand most people are in stage three. I think most people are actually in stage four. I think that most places I've worked have been positive and happy and inspired and share core values. But I do see still a lot of that tribal pride. It's us, you know, that's important.
Probably you, I feel like when you are having a department that's a little bit more dysfunctional, you probably, I see, you know, that stage three, it's got the lone warrior. I suspect when things are a little bit more dysfunctional, that's when those sort of people really come to the fore because they're trying their hardest and they've got their standards and they probably really, you know, held them really highly, but they're just not quite sure how to bring it all together, maybe. And then until you've got more functional department, then you can get more to that. Just some of the places I've worked in, I think I've seen some of this lone warrior sort of behavior.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Doesn't help
I think you're
on
right.
the
And I
whole.
think probably in COVID or when times are stressful, you see it.
100%. Or if that person, again, like you say, get to know them. They come to work and it's just not necessarily healthy, the interrelationships. And you do wonder, I often reflect and I think, I wonder what's going on for them to be like that towards other people. You know, is this from childhood and adolescence? And is this just their learned behavior of interacting with people? Or is this a re reflection of just too much going on in life in general and that's their coping mechanism on that day here and now, which probably links in, I think.
Yeah, I think you probably hit the nail on the head. There's probably a bit of both, isn't it? There people regress to lower levels of coping when they're under stress, and they might have a pattern of regressing to. In fact, we all do. If we're under stress, when you test,
100%. You're under stress, your natural tendencies will predominate.
Absolutely,
Particularly
absolutely.
my parenting styles and stuff, you know, I think about that.
Yeah.
It all relates, all connected, isn't it? Right.
Definitely. So, how do we build a perfect team? I'm always interested in building a perfect team. And especially when you're, like you say, you're looking around and you're like, ah, we've got a bit of lone warrior stuff happening here. People are starting to be all out for themselves. And what is it that's going to build trust within your team, but what's going to build trust between different tribes as well? And so what so I Googled it.
Power
And
Google.
so what did Google say? Well, Google knows. And it turns out that out of all the elements of building strong, functional, thriving teams, the most important thing is psychological safety. So your team needs to really feel safe to take risks and to be vulnerable in front of each other. And that's true within a team, building within a tribe, building your tribe's strength and identity. But if you want to build bridges between different tribes, you really need to feel safe to be vulnerable in front of that, in that other tribe as well. And now, so this came to a fore for me a bit because one of the hats I wear is the GP liaison role, which is really a bit of a go-between between primary and secondary care services in my rohi. And so how was I going to improve the relationship between GPs and hospital doctors? And what I decided to try was coming together in the same space one evening to be vulnerable, so to have a M&M type discussion where we were GPs who had concerns about things that had gone on in the hospital. I could investigate them and I could reflect them back to the GPs in the presence of the hospital doctors, and we together as a single healthcare tribe, could analyze them and come up with some solutions and suggestions. And that took a lot of courage because we were, when I say we, this time as a hospitalist, we were being vulnerable about cases that GPs had raised, or in fact, that we had raised within our own clinical governance space and shared them in an effort to build trust. And that actually was probably, it was really successful, and it's something that we've kept doing in Taupō and Te Rangi. We've come together on a regular basis and discussed these as a healthcare community. And it's really helped to improve that psychological safety, build trust, and reduce tribalism between primary and secondary care. So that was something cool that
How
we've.
often do you meet?
So we've started off actually only doing the full cases. We just do that once a year, and we've done that for the past 5 years now. But we also come together and do a best case ever as well. So there's a couple of options for building relationships.
And do you
And
get, is
when.
it just doctors, or do you get other clinicians involved?
So it's doctors and nurse practitioners, but if the cases allow, we actually invite hospice along and clinical pharmacists along. So it's a really multidisciplinary approach. And that's been really important because, for example, if cases involve medication safety, it's great to have community pharmacists or, that can actually provide that insight because quite often there is system level changes that we need to make that involve processes within pharmacy as well. So having that many different tribes involved just improves our ability to understand issues from a lot of different perspectives and to come up with some creative solutions as well.
I like it.
So I guess when we're feeling that fight or flight or fear response, which often happens in M&Ms, I don't know if you've had much to do with them, but it's really hard,
No.
especially if it's a case you're involved in, like it's really hard to shelve that feeling of, oh my God, I did something wrong, to be able to commit yourself to problem solving. And so at the start of any kind of meeting like this, I always remind people that whatever you do, as the ground rules are, you don't blame each other, but you don't blame yourself either. Because as soon as we start to bring our fear, fight and flight and defense up, you can't be creative. You can't problem solve.
No. You're in
really need
defense mode, aren't you? It becomes, yeah, quite negative.
exactly. You just need that psychological safety to be able to solve these.
Reflect and, yeah, and move forward. Yeah, totally.
Absolutely. Yeah, so that was kind of the impetus for looking into tribalism and healthcare a little bit more. There are really great things about tribes, don't get me wrong. Like, I love belonging to even the hospital tribe, and when I'm in primary care, the primary care tribe. But I do see actually that it's really important to remember that all tribes are great, and we want to try our best to step out of that competitive space and into the collaborative space, because I really think that's where we're going to get the best patient outcomes.
Collaboration. I like it. Yes. I know. And hopefully we can work on that a wee bit more going forward, particularly in the current health environment that we find ourselves all in. Because in the system we've got at the moment, I don't know if everyone feels like this, but I certainly feel like that tribalism and that protection. And when you're all a bit stressed and you just, it's not enough staff and you haven't got enough time and there's all those bed blocks and all that stuff that we're seeing in the news and then the poor outcomes, which the media totally jump onto, don't they? That certainly leads to people being protectionist of themselves and their team and their department in whatever way that may be.
Yeah, and I've got a lot of compassion for that too, because, yeah, as you said, that's a symptom of people who are under stress. And then whatever we need to do for ourselves and our teams to get ourselves into a place where we can be more open and be more collaborative, is great. And there will be sometimes that that's too much of ask. Sometimes we just batten down and look after ourselves. But the stage five to strive for, I think, the thing that they all hopefully are inspired by, is being able to reach that place where it's not our tribe against the world. It's actually how can we all reach for what's possible rather than just what our tribe can do in relation to what your tribe can do.
100%. So on that note, let's aim to all be collaborative and actually, people could consider setting up those sort of M&Ms because building those relationships, because if we are actually all just one health tribe, just all just with different little components within the health tribe, we are really all on the same side, aren't we? And it's all about, the focus has changed significantly in the time from paternalistic to patient-centered care and try to put the patient at the center of the journey. And that's how we should move forward. So thank you very much for that, Robin. That was a great chat on medical tribalism. And I look forward to catching up with you next time. Keep an eye out for our next podcast in the series where we're going to have a look at cognitive bias.
Awesome. Hey, thanks so much for having me, Lucinda. I look forward to chatting to you again. Ka kite.